Hello, welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast, the first episode of 2022, and we're going to kick off this year with an interview with Lewis Hole, who is the CEO and founder of Marked.com. A little bit about Marked. Marked is a leading managed marketplace focused on quality, pre-owned and dead stock products from the world's best lifestyle brands. They take care of all aspects of the selling process for our wardrobe sellers, and Marked is spelled M-A-R-R-K-T, and we'll put all the show notes over at Menswear Style. But here is Lewis himself to talk about Marked in his own words.
We're based in York. Well, the warehouse is just outside of York in a market town called Easingwold, which is it's about 12 miles out of York. We have a warehouse here that we purpose-built about 4 years ago. So it's kind of cooked with offices and storage and photo studios and kind of purpose built for e-commerce, really.
Okay. And perhaps just give an introduction, a thumbnail sketch of you, please, Lewis, and how you got Marked off the ground.
Yeah, sure. I suppose I've been in menswear for the past 15 years. My first foray into it was looking at distribution of kind of hard to find brands in the Western market. So I started off with a brand called Studio D'Artisan, distributing that to kind of, heritage-led stores throughout Europe. But that's back in 2007. I suppose the market's always been an idea on the side and kind of running alongside other businesses. I had an online store called superdenim.com and a retail store in Covent Garden called the Real McCoy's London, which was a kind of an outpost of a Japanese brand we were working with. But Marked's always run alongside those businesses, not as the major business at the time, but we used to work with Nigel Caborn selling all of their dead stock, and that's how Marked came about. It would kind of come alive whenever we got the stock from them, then go dormant for a little while, and then when we got some more stock, would kind of pipe up again. And then in 2017, I guess, that was when we switched towards the pre-owned market as opposed to just doing dead stock.
Right.
So now we do both, but the majority part of it is the pre-owned, really.
And how did you find life in Covent Garden in terms of retail and in terms of, I don't know, headaches? Or do you feel like you got out at the right time in terms of bricks and mortar?
Yeah, we closed that store at the end of 2019 when the 5-year lease was up on the shop. But November 2019, that was soon followed by the pandemic, and I couldn't imagine anything worse than having a London based resale store through that. So I don't know. I think some things are meant to be, really. Oh, yeah. Maybe someone was shining a light down on us when we closed it. Super Denim also shut at a similar time. I decided to focus all of my energy on Marked, really, from January 2020. And then the pandemic hit and that really changed the business a lot for the good.
So how did we come about? What are the stepping stones of getting Marked off the ground? Maybe you can talk about raising the capital, starting the website, etc., and leveraging interest.
Yeah, so I guess from a capital point of view, it's always been entirely self-funded. We've got 7 employees, and you know it operates in the real world, so to speak, where you know it's obliged to make and reinvest its profits to, you know, to pay the wages, pay the rents, pay, you know, give everybody a livelihood. So from that perspective, it's, you know, I know quite a few businesses in the market that we operate in, you know, they're quite venture capital funded, or they've, you know, had massive outlays up front. We've kind of done it the opposite way around, really, in terms of we've proven the concept. And this year, we are seeking investment partners to realise the kind of growth ambitions we've got that cash flow just can't support entirely, really. So yeah, that's one of the focuses for this year, really, to try and take in some funding to do the things we've been hoping to do for a while.
And what state is the business in now, then, if you don't mind me asking, in terms of like how many people have you got on board, how many staff, and kind of the turnover, etc.? What are you pitching to the investors?
Yeah, we've just started 2022 with 7 staff. We just took on a new marketing manager and a new in-house accountant. January 2021, there was 3 of us. January 2020, there was 2 of us. So yeah, it's been quite a shift. In terms of growth, we've doubled every year from 2020, when I kind of started putting my energy into it, it was turning over maybe 300 grand. And then by the end of 2020, we'd doubled that to like 650, I think it was. And last year, we doubled it to 1.2 million. So it's growing fast, really. And, you know, we're reinvesting in people to try and grow the business as well. And we've got growth plans for this year as well. So it'd be interesting how it pans out.
Maybe, Lewis, you can talk a little bit how the business model itself, for people that aren't familiar as well, with how it works, how you get commission, but also how it benefits people that are reselling the clothes through your platform.
Yeah, we kind of recognized some time ago that we focus on genuine quality items. We don't do a lot of stuff where the value is based on a logo or something like that. We try to focus on products with a genuine quality, and that there's an inherent value to that can be passed on. So by focusing on that, I also recognize that selling items privately on eBay or Depop, it works for some people, but I think other people find it a bit of a headache. So that's where we come in. People send us their items. We'll photograph it, list it. If it sells, I have to send it to the customer, handle any returns. All aspects of an e-commerce store, really. And then once it's sold, there's a returns period we have to kind of wait by. And then we pay out the person who the item ultimately belongs to. They're part of the money. We take a commission. It's on a sliding scale. It's higher for lower price items, but lower for higher price items.
Right.
And it seems to work for a lot of people. We're taking new sellers all the time. We've got a lot of regular sellers, and it almost becomes a bit of an ecosystem for some of them. You know, they'll have a look at what they're not using anymore, box it up, send it to us, and then that money is perhaps reinvested in new things that they like.
Yeah,
but it just becomes a lot very, very, very hassle-free for people.
And so, how does it work? Say, for example, I've seen some brands listed on your website. You've got some great names, some personal favourites like Barbour and Crockett and Jones, Levi's Vintage. You know, people can check out the website for. There's tons of brands on there. But let's just say there's a brand that's not on there. Let's say I have a load of NPL stuff, for example. I'm going. Crikey, I've got about 10 cashmere jumpers that I'd like to shift. Do you now have to think, oh, great, I have to now kind of set up my own section of the website dedicated to NPL? How does it work?
From our point of view, no, we just create a collection within Shopify. So it's fairly straightforward to introduce a new brand. Right. There's no real extra work at our end. I think we added up the other day. There's 550 brands on there at the moment. So no, as long as we feel it's a product they can sell, it's in good condition, and it kind of shares the ethos of what we're all about, really. Then we'll take it in. We don't do hugely with your kind of household designer names. I don't know whether it's Hugo Boss or maybe Paul Smith. We try not to be too niche, but I guess we do have a niche in terms of some of the brands that we sell.
Right. I mean, I've got to say, the business model that I've learned about on the website and for you is really up my street in the way that I hate
I hate packaging. I hate kind of the whole eBay process of, you know, the buying, the selling of, you know, getting it back. So you kind of deal with all the returns your end, if I'm not mistaken, which for clothes is a huge deal for me, because when someone buys clothes off me that I sell on a platform like that, I'm always kind of expecting something to come back into my hands and then have that added, you know, back and forth. And
yeah, you've got to deal with it again.
I've always got to try and fight for a good review or a good feedback. And how can you explain the kind of returns process and the picking up and just kind of fight and finesse that for us?
Yeah. So it's been one of the downsides of selling clothing online is that, you know, you do get returns, and I think we're running about 20% returns rate. It's always a little bit disheartening when you see the postman arrive with about 30 bags of stuff coming back. But
I know I used to run a fashion shop in Cambridge, and my postman, whenever he'd come in through the door with one of my bags, I would just tell him to go hit the bricks. I'd say, I don't need you. Yeah. It's a real sinker. But again, you kind of cater for it.
It's part and parcel of the industry, really. Forgive the pun, but I suppose what we try to do is normalize selling your items within the confines of a professionally run retail e-commerce operation, as opposed to buying, I don't know, you might buy a £500 Stone Island jacket off eBay or something, and it turns up in a bin liner, and we've tried to make it as close to, well, we try to make it just like buying from an employer or an end clothing, you know, whether it's pre-owned or not, you're still buying it from a proper e-commerce retailer. I think from a value proposition as well, you know, you're getting pre-owned items in a very fine condition at a great price, really.
So like when you buy privately from a seller, again, let's just use eBay as an example, you're kind of dealing with that person direct, but I think going through you, there's that vetting process, isn't there? That, so like if someone buys from you, there's obviously a team there, yourself, maybe some of your staff, that have already vetted the item and deemed it worthy enough to resell, rather than if someone goes direct to the person that owns it, you kind of always have that added risk of this guy just trying to get rid of it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's why it's growing so quickly in a way. It puts confidence in both the seller and the person buying it as well. It kind of removes that, I don't know, slight awkwardness of just doing it privately.
Do you notice some items sell a lot quicker than others? As in, like, do shoes or jeans, shirts? Is there something that kind of shifts a lot quicker than other garments?
Outerwear is probably our best selling. We sell a lot of shirts, actually. We do get given a lot of shirts. Pretty much everything. But I'd say if you're looking for a kind of bestseller, would be, you know, like a nice outerwear piece, which are maybe, sometimes we've got the bigger price tags to begin with. Right. I know we do well with Drake's, a lot of their outerwear pieces. We sold 2 Everest Parkas last week from Caborn, which... I suppose it was freezing cold last week in the time of year, but I think people see a lot of value in, you know, like decent outerwear pieces that have got a fair amount of discount off and can be obtained at a great price.
Lewis, just had this thought. I was going to ask you what are the common misconceptions about buying secondhand and vintage. But I guess one of mine and my girlfriend's apprehensions is probably the word, is that you can buy something that might look good and in a good condition, but then when it's secondhand, it might have its kind of own smell or scent that can't really be, you can't detect that when you're just looking at something online. Have you ever encountered that when you buy stock from a reseller or buy garments from someone trying to sell it on, that there's, you know, it comes with a smell that you can't really get rid of?
Yeah, sometimes it's more than a smell, to be fair. Right. We've got a washing machine downstairs and a very good dry cleaner in York that we use. Some stuff comes in a bit like immaculately ironed, like not a, well, you know, smell absolutely lovely, fresh. other stuff looks like the one at Saturday night and spilt a kebab around down it and, you know, scrunched up and you know, you've just got to deal with it really in terms of, you know, we had a seller last week that sent in about 150 items, but half of it needed washing. And some of it, on first impressions, you look at it and think, there's no way we can sell that. But we've since had them cleaned and, you know, they were good items, but just in a pretty bad way. But we've kind of got them renovated, as it were, a good wash and steam, right, and all the stains come out. So, we do recognise that and try to eliminate as much of those kind of preconceptions as possible with, you know, with pre-owned. I think all the things you mentioned are true and are, you know, it's one of the natures of pre-owned stuff, but we do try to wash as many things if there's, you know, if it smells or if there's a stain on it or if it, you know, if we don't feel it's good, we'll send it back to the seller. We've got our reputation to maintain as well, really. So.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. So Lewis, tell me where the business is now at the moment. I know that you did a pop-up, I think around about Christmas time. I think you partnered with Simon Crompton over at Permanent Style with some tailoring pieces. Mm-hmm. Have you got any more plans to do some bricks and mortar in the new year?
Yeah, the event we did with Simon in on Savile Row at the service coffee shop has got a space that's quite good for events at the back. That was the first time we'd done it in person. We were meant to do it back in March 2020 with Simon, but obviously the pandemic put a pause on that. But this was the first in-person event we'd ever done, and it was great, really. We kind of didn't realise how many, almost like fans we had, really. And, you know, it was nice to see a lot of those in person that came to see us. And Simon sold a load of his pre-owned stuff, and we took a load of pre-owned, as well as dead stock stuff as well. And it was a great success, and it's something we'd like to do again. So it's definitely something we're going to be looking at this year, whether it's with Permanent Style again or independent of them. Not quite sure yet. We just had a meeting this morning with our new head of marketing, David, and it was one of the things we spoke about doing that, or even maybe looking for some sort of concession in a store, perhaps, or. I'm not sure yet, but it was definitely something we'd like to do again. The trouble with online is you don't get to meet your customers that much. Yeah. So, you know, you recognise names a lot, and, you know, you have a feeling of who your regular customers are, but not necessarily a face to the name. So,
yeah, that's nice interesting. You'll need a lot of vintage clothing is all about community as well, isn't it? About people that kind of want to have that story of what this garment might have meant to them or, you know, someone else that they knew. And I think some of those stories could be lost when it's just a virtual world that they're living in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been great to kind of see who your demographic is as well, you know, to work out, you know, are your main people under 20? Are they under 50, or, you know, it's a really good exercise, and yeah, we want to take it on the road again this year, but yeah, just putting the plans together.
Have you ever found a garment that's come on your lap, so to speak, landed in your lap, that you think is worth more than perhaps the seller has thought it is? I'll give you an example. Maybe it's a suit that possibly could have been worn by a Bond actor or something like that, and you think, crikey blimey, I can make a freaking fortune at Julian's auction on this. Well, what's this guy doing? Has anything like that come across where you feel like something has been there's a huge opportunity?
Yeah, we had a piece last year. It was a British paratrooper's smock, like a camo one, from an actual, like, really great condition one from I think it's like 1940s or something. I'm embarrassed to say that at the time I didn't even know what it was. I'd put what I thought was a fair price on it, put it online, and then somebody who's got a bit better idea emailed us and said, actually, you've got something really special there. So we ended up selling it to a specialist dealer in Canada who specializes in British military stuff, and got a really great price for it, and obviously great for the seller as well. He'd picked up some years ago, and I think a vintage store in the States. I hadn't paid a huge amount for it, but in reality, it was a really rare piece.
Right.
That was one. Most of the stuff is, we can recognize the value of it, really. But yeah, every now and again, you get something through that it takes you by surprise.
I think that's the beauty of shopping for vintage. And I think it used to be a bigger thing back in the day before people could kind of look up things online and then find out the value, maybe Googling a brand or a model number of something. I would actually have my old keyboard teacher. His side job, his beer money, was going out to cash converters and finding all the stuff that was labeled incorrectly, or that they thought, oh no, this guy's selling it for like a tenner. I can easily get 200 quid for this. And then, so that would be like his Saturday. Yeah. And he'd go around and do all those lootings. I mean, I don't know if it's something that you kind of look at as well, where you feel like, oh,
Now and again, we've got a few sellers like that, though. They're kind of looking on eBay all the time, or in sales, if Mr. Porter goes into like a massive friends and family reduction or something, they're kind of snapping the bits up and then they're giving it to you to try and flip them on a bit. Right. So that's something we do a lot of, really. And we've always stayed away from the whole kind of flipping and hype pricing stuff. We've never really been a place where you'd buy rare pair of trainers and then sell them for four times what you paid for them, and that kind of thing. Tend to leave that to the others, but
interesting areas. Well, Lewis, thanks for taking time out and talking to us about Marked, which is spelled marrkt.com. It's a place people can go and have a look at all those wonderful pieces, and best of luck and continued success. And when you do a pop-up and you come back to London, please give us a nod. We'd love to come down
and let
our audience know that you're around.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content, and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you'd like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.